Welcome to The Bike Show with me, Jack Thurston. And this is the first in the spring season of 2014. It's good to be back. Now, over the last 10 years of The Bike Show, it's hard to believe it's been 10 years, how a decade has flown by. I've endeavoured to bring you the best, and I'm afraid sometimes the worst, of music about cycling, or music inspired by the bicycle. And on today's show, I'm delighted to be bringing you some really good music inspired by the bicycle. It's by a band called Me for Queen. And I spoke to the lead singer, Mary Erskine, on a Skype line a few days ago. And I began by asking her what it was that had first inspired her and the band to write a whole album inspired by the bicycle.
We wanted to write something collaboratively because it used to just be my sort of singer-songwriter project, but I sort of got some friends involved, and then we just thought, you know what, it would be great to write something all together. So we went up to Scotland. I'd been kind of persuading them for about the last 2 years that it'd be a good idea to write an album about cycling, and they eventually came round, basically. So
what made you think it was a good idea to record an album about cycling?
99% of my good ideas, I'd say, for, you know, songwriting and everything else, come to me when I'm on a bike. I don't know what it is about just that kind of mental space that you get, even in a, you know, crowded city. There's just something amazing about the space that comes from just sort of, I don't know, the mechanics of just, you know, your body's kind of doing the work, but actually your head is completely free. Yeah, I just thought it'd be really interesting to look at, you know, the world of the cyclists, the world of bikes. You know, just that the more I kind of looked into it, I started reading lots of books by cyclists or about cycling. And I just thought there's so much here that we could do.
There are some pitfalls with an album that's quite so literally tied to one subject, isn't it? Because sometimes the best music is a little bit abstracted from something as concrete,
yeah,
and tangible as a bicycle. And certainly I would say, in terms of critiquing music that I've heard that is inspired by or about cycling, it's often a bit ploddingly literal.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we're musicians before we're cyclists. So I thought it'd be really interesting to see if we could get an album that you can listen to without realizing it's about bikes, basically. There's only one song, I think, well, Deer in the Dark is, you know, it talks about Richmond Park and, you know, you're kind of flying around, and that's the only one that's actually about the physical act of being on a bike, if that makes sense. The rest of it's all quite abstract, and it's kind of, you know, just stories, basically. Stories from the road.
Well, shall we listen to Deer in the Dark?
Yes, Me and My Horse and the Deer in the Dark. Yeah, let's go for it.
Before dark, sound of 100 beating hearts, breath to breath, wheel to wheel, lost in a whirlpool nobody can steal. Clear the mind with time and space, hear your kings, what is it that you chase? Crouching low, heads tucked in tight, race to the end of the fading light. All of those voices that no one can hear, let them speak. What if you come to find something you left behind? Secret I promise to keep. Break out from the race. What is it we see? Click into that space. Follow your feet. Cause it's just me and my horse and the deer. Just me and my horse and the deer in the dark tonight. No one knows where you have been. Nobody can see the things that you see. You'll remember that setting sun binds you together cause you saw it as one. Soon the others will fade away.
That was Me for Queen and The Deer in the Dark. You said, Mary, that that was about cycling around Richmond Park. And I think a lot of people will get that who have cycled around Richmond Park, because it is this quite strange place you go to, especially when it's, as you're describing in the song, that's in the dark, that it's it's part of London, but you feel like you're in quite a different realm. And then one of the things that I really liked about the lyric is that you describe these sensations and experiences that you're having that are particular to you and that will come back with you after you've done your ride into the world that you're in sort of the day-to-day life. But it's almost like you've experienced something out of the ordinary and then you're taking it back into the sort of ordinary quotidian life.
It was inspired by one particular moment that, you know, that I was in Richmond Park and the sun is setting. It's kind of that, you know, I don't know, like 8 or 9 o'clock, I think it was. It was just before they kind of closed the gates. And there aren't that many cars at that stage. It's kind of out of, you know, rush hour and stuff. So it is just full of cyclists. And you're just thinking there are so many different people here. And, you know, what are you all, why did you come here? Like, what do you get out of it? Because it's not just fitness, you know, it's so much more than that. And all the different bikes of, you know, shapes and sizes and, it's so universal, but at the same time, everyone's got their reason why they keep coming back, and the fact that it is so solitary. You're out on your own, but you may be kind of cycling with a few friends, but you're still, you know, you find your own pace and you do it on your own. I think definitely my first long distance cycle that I did was the Dunwich Dynamo a few years ago, and that's sort of 120 miles. You know, you go out from London to Dunwich, to the coast, and I signed up with a few friends and I just left them. Didn't realize that, you know, you do just find your pace basically and you kind of meet at checkpoints. But I didn't realize how antisocial I turned into, I'd become.
Well, it is a strange thing about cycling is that it often is something that you do together. And from the external point of view, when you look at a group of cyclists, you think, oh, look, they're all together. But actually, you are on your own.
Yeah.
And you are in your own internal world a lot of the time.
Yeah, so, yeah.
You've got a couple of demo tracks, and we'll hear the second one in a bit, but you need to turn this into a whole album. Is the whole album written?
Yeah. Wrote it last summer, so it's all ready to go.
Yeah.
It's just it's just a question of recording it really
so
now.
So you need to raise the funds for your month long stint in an expensive 64-track residential studio if you can't afford the South of France, you could always come to Rockfield down the road from me in Abergavenny. That's a well-known place. I think that's where they recorded Bohemian Rhapsody in the in the 1970s.
Oh.
I think it was the first residential recording studio, so I'm told.
Wow, okay.
But anyway, so if your pledge campaign goes really well, you can come down to Rockfield for a month of making music and cycling in the lanes of Monmouthshire.
Oh, that'd be perfect.
So you do need to raise this money. How much do you need to raise, and when do you need to raise it by?
We need to raise it by the middle of April. We're going for a budget, I'd say, of it's 4,500 is our total, and then on top of that you have a sort of percentage commission that goes to the website that hosts the campaign, and then 5% goes to charity as well. So in terms of what we just need to record the album, we're literally just spending it on time in a studio, which is this not-for-profit studio in East London, just off Brick Lane.
So you have selected the studio. Okay.
We have, yeah. Well, that's where we did the demos as well.
Right.
So and it's just sort of 10-minute bike ride, so that's nice and easy. So we'll hopefully do that in the middle of April, and then we've got this the small question of packaging it. We've got a great graphic designer, Casper Williamson, who has already done the sort of demo artwork and stuff. The horse with the mechanics inside it, which you'll see on the various sort of Facebook website stuff. And so he's going to be making the album artwork, which will include a sort of fold out poster of a bike map of the fictional world of the album, basically. So we're really excited about that. So that's basically what the money is going towards.
The way it works is a bit like Kickstarter, but it's called, the site's called pledgemusic.com. Yeah. And there are various things that you can get in exchange for what you pledge, from a digital download to the physical album on a CD. Mm-hmm. It's £8 for the digital downloads, £15 for the CD, and then tickets to the album launch and things like that. Handwritten lyrics, 75 quid. We will write you a personal jingle.
Yep, my dad's already gone for that one.
Brilliant. So there's 14 left. That's going to be hard work if you get all 14 of those.
Yeah. Pledge are really big on kind of encouraging people to have as many kind of experience-based, you know, rewards. Yeah. So, obviously for us, we're just starting out. We haven't got a fan base of millions and millions. So so people aren't going to be so interested in buying, you know, a Tupperware box full of our saliva or something like that. There are bands who've done it. They've sold like vials of blood and stuff. Whereas for us, that's not such an option, and I don't think anyone would buy them. But yeah, we've tried quite hard to get some nice offers, you know, so that, you know, there's customized artwork and stuff. And Andy, our drummer, makes models. So we've got 3D model of the bike of your choice. And then obviously one of the big prizes is David Sparshot, who's this fantastic illustrator, has offered us this completely exclusive to our campaign, which is to have yourself and your bike and another person, if you'd like, and their bike included in one of his prints called Procession, which is this lovely print of a sort of a long procession of all sorts of different cyclists. There's an old lady on her bike, there's a racer, there's a dog, I think, in someone's pannier, and it's really sweet.
That's so terrific. Yeah. Well, you've been amazingly creative in coming up with all these potential rewards, and I just have to say, if there's somebody who wants to donate the £75 for writing a jingle and to donate that jingle to the bike show and make it a jingle for the radio show, then that would be great. So if you want to do that, get in touch, make the pledge, get in touch with me, get in touch with the band, and you can do that. You can look at the you can listen to the music, look at the pledge thing on pledgemusic.com. I'll put links to that from the bike show website, and your band's website is www.meforqueen.com. and shall we listen to the other demo track that you've done? But before that, tell us live dates that you've got coming up in April, please.
Well, we've got a big show in London at Look Mum No Hands, at their lovely new Mare Street branch. And then we're very excited to come over to Bristol the day after that, on the 11th of April. It's a Friday. We're playing at Roll for the Soul with this amazing Bristol-based Laura Kidd, she makes War is her sort of stage name. She's brilliant, and she's going to be supporting us there. So we're really excited about that.
Let's hear White Bike, which is the other track. Do you want to tell us a bit about that, or should we just go straight into it?
Let's go straight into it, and then we can chat after.
It's early in the evening, after dinner with a friend. Forward to the night air, distill the thoughts that line your head, wave your goodbyes and pull away. Those two small words they always say. Telephone ringing, and it's too late to be good news. A shudder of intuition. Oh, if only you could choose. Keep one more minute, one more day. Those words in that mouth could stay. To the picture in the paper, stranger smiling ear to ear. Even a thousand words ring hollow, still you try your best to hear. And when we rush on by that corner where a ghost is chained with flowers, to know that we still see you, and the fate that could be ours. Eyes closed, hear us as we pray. Keep my love safe.
That was the second track of the demos for Iron Horse by Me for Queen, and I'm talking with Me for Queen's frontwoman, Mary Erskine. Tell us about White Bike.
It has been, sort of loitering around in my head for a while. You just always see them. It's completely...
These are the memorial bikes for people who've been killed.
Exactly. Either that or, you do open the newspaper and you just kind of flick on through going, oh, God, that's, especially a few months ago when they were just so, there was just that real spate of I think it was 8 in over a couple of weeks or something. Mm. I don't know what the official number was, but I just wanted to have a think about the idea of the different perspectives, and so it sort of starts from the cyclist and then it goes to their family getting the call. I'm just big on empathy, really. As a songwriter and as a human being, I find myself getting very tied up in other people's stories, and I possibly a bit too much, but this was just a chance to kind of try and present the full picture around that story that you maybe just spend 10 seconds reading on, on the tube or whatever.
Well, brilliant, Mary. Thanks for joining us, and all the best with raising the funds to make the rest of the album. I'm sure you'll do it, and hopefully listeners to The Bike Show can help you to do it too by contributing on the Pledge Music site.
Hi, I'm Graham Aubrey. You're listening to Resonance FM. Because you're with it. Because you're with it. No, I've done it too far now. Taken it too far. Imagine me what I'm like when I drink beer.
Now, last weekend was the first Welsh cycle show held down at the Newport Velodrome. And I was really pleased to see that Condor, the famous London bicycle company, had quite a big presence there. So I made a beeline for Condor Managing Director Grant Young, and I began by asking him what he thought of the first Welsh cycle show.
It's very exciting. I actually helped them get this show together, so I've been backwards and forwards for meetings, and the venue's great, and I hope it's got a future here. It's looking good.
It's nice to see the track cyclists going round and around. You don't get that at the NEC, do you?
No, you don't. But again, this was one of our ideas to have some racing going on, to create some atmosphere, really, which I think it's done.
So what's Condor up to? Where are you headed this year?
Okay, well, we never stand still in our thinking and what we do. We like to have models that have a fairly long life expectancy, because to change models isn't good for anyone. The steel frame market is very, very buoyant at the moment, and we've got something unique to us, which we've just had UCI approved as well, called a Super Achaio, and it's a steel frame that we've worked closely with Columbus in forming some very new shaped tubes and bringing out a frame that rides probably better than anything else on the market, carbon-wise.
Have you got one here?
Yeah.
We can go and take a look.
If you look at it, no one can believe it's a steel frame because of the shape of it. All the shaped tubes were designed by us. They're unique to us. We're the first people in the world, I believe, that have got 1 1/8 to 1 1/4 head tube on a steel frame. The seat stays very, very flat.
Very flat and thin from the side, which looks very nice, doesn't it?
Aesthetically, really beautiful.
Yeah.
Quite heavy chainstay, so it's ultra stiff. It was designed by us and tested by our professional team for a few years. They were racing. In fact, Christian House rode a couple of stages in the Tour of Britain a year ago without anyone knowing what he was using and what this was, and the team have fallen in love with it and love riding it, love racing on it, though predominantly they use carbon bikes because of their weight. But it's only I think 0.5 kilo more than carbon, so it's nothing in it, but the ride, the stiffness is superb, and so far the magazines have been going crazy over it.
So why do you think there is this second life of steel, if we can call it that?
One of the problems that we're faced with is to explain to the end user about carbon fibre, because it's an absolute minefield with what you can get. And, you know, why can you buy a whole bike, carbon fibre bike, for £1,000? Because the thing is, there's very, very cheap ways of producing mixtures of fiberglass and carbon fiber, and those sort of bikes will ride, you'll get probably a worse ride off of those than an aluminium frame. But to try and get that over to the public is very, very difficult, and they're slowly realizing that, you know, there's a price for everything and there's good and bad, so that people are learning now about steel frames, why are steel frames so comfortable. And it's funny enough, it's a younger crowd that seem to be wanting steel frames again. You would have thought it's traditional older cyclists, but they want the lightest carbon fibre models.
Well, I was talking to Guy Andrews, the editor of Ruleur, who was saying that after an interview he'd done with Gary Klein, originator of aluminium bicycles, that he thought that now was the time for very, very high-end aluminium to make a comeback. What do you think of that as an idea?
I probably agree. We've actually brought back a light aluminium race frame, though be it it's at our lower end of the market. We brought it back because it's so good, and it's actually the crazy thing is it's probably very similar in weight to a carbon frame, but at a fraction of the cost. And again, everyone that rides it love it. And in certain markets and certain areas, it's doing very well.
And so how much is it about the material itself, and how much is it about what you do with the material?
What I always say in my experience, the frame is the most important part of a bike. Before you put anything on it, get the frame right. So the material is crucial, and of course how it's made is extra crucial. Yeah.
So is that in terms of the size of the tubing, or is that the geometry, or is it the whole package?
How do you
take that apart into sections? You know, when you're designing a new bicycle like the one we're standing in front of here, how do you end up with what you've got there? What sort of thought process do you go through, and how do you test the theories?
Yeah, well, the thing is, what you have to do is, there's a number of tubes that have different stress ratios, so you try your hardest to get each tube as light as possible at the highest grade, in this instance the highest grade steel, so you can afford to have a lighter down tube, but you need the top tube, say, to be stronger. So it depends on where the butts are and where you can reduce the weight. Once you've got that right, and that goes, you know, that can be 2 years down the line testing different.
So are you drawing on engineering there? Are you having stuff in the computer or pen and paper? What's the method?
We're drawing on engineering, and then we put that into practice by building. And we may build 10 different alternatives before we get it right. You know, we may think we need a stiffer chainstay, or we need a stiffer seat stay. So you can cut weight where it doesn't matter, where there's less stress on the frame.
And what sort of tests do you do between those 10 prototypes to work out which ones are working and which ones are not?
We still do it a very old, probably an old-fashioned way, but it's the best way. And we get key riders to use it and give us the feedback. And that works every time.
So is that part of the reason why you sponsor a team?
Yeah, it's one of the reasons, yes. Yeah, it's become quite important, actually, yes.
And do they enjoy doing that, or do they think, oh God, what's Grant giving me to ride this time?
No, because they are genuinely interested in what we do and very proud of being part of Condor. And if they think they've helped to create that product for that end user, then it's brilliant. And I think it's great that we can use them as well, that are respected, and the public know them. So yes, it helps.
So we're looking at what might be considered to be top of the range type of bicycle here. How does that thinking that you have described filter down to the bike that you might get for the bike to work scheme or something like that? You know, under a grand.
Again, with one thing that customers pick up on is that the attention to detail, whether it's a £1,000 bike or a £5,000 bike, the frames are built exactly the same way, the same attention, the same care is done throughout the whole range of bikes that we do. And if we look at an entry level road bike over there, you'll see that it's the same product as a very expensive carbon or steel.
Are they made in the same place or made in different places? Where are they made?
Every Condor frame now is made at our facility in Italy. We moved over there some 15 years ago. It got very, very difficult to teach our old builders how to produce things in the new materials, and we'd really tried hard, but it just wasn't happening. And had we have stayed the same, we would have been, not saying we would have gone, but we would have been a small business now. So we took the opportunity, whereas all the big Italian famous makers went to China and left all the craftsmen without any work in Italy, we took a factory over who now produce for us, and produced in the highest quality standards that we could ever wish for. We're there all the time. We make sure standards are high, paint facilities are brilliant, and it works well. And we're very proud to say we produce in, okay, not the UK, but in Europe.
So whose factory was that before it was the Condor factory, and whose craftsmen were the guys you got working for you?
They, you know, lots of craftsmen in Italy produced frames in their heyday for famous people, you know, De Rosa, Colnago, De Cordi, to mention a few. And they all used to use various factories.
And so it wasn't a specific company's factory. It was a factory that was meeting orders from different companies.
That was quite the norm in Italy. And now we're proud to say they're working with us and rely on us, which is brilliant.
And so are they happy to have British bosses?
Very much so.
So one thing I want to ask you about is this new type of bicycle, which I think we can identify as a new type of bicycle. Someone might say it's a kind of a cross bike, but what I'm talking about is the kind of bicycle that has, it's a sort of roadish bike. It's got disc brakes, which allows you to have big clearances. You can swap out the tyres for different usage, so you can put your skinny tyres on or you can put your fat tyres on and go off-road in absolute, you know, security that you're not going to be sliding all over the place. Is that the bike that we're looking at here that I've just described?
You could, at a pinch, put
a light rack on it and do a, you know, weekend's credit card touring.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing...
Because I think that is a new type of bicycle. I call it a kind of do-it-all bicycle. I mean, Genesis have got their one, the Quadrifair, and other companies have got theirs. And I think it's a really interesting development in bicycles because it does seem as though it could be one bike that does an awful lot of jobs.
Mm. It's certainly new for lots of people. For us, we've been doing it for a long, long time, these crossover type bikes. And here is one called a Bivio Cross.
It's not a hybrid, because I think a lot of people think crossover bike is a hybrid.
No.
You know, immediately sort of is a bit of a turn off, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, it's basically a bike that would be more than adequate as a commuter bike, or as a tourer, or as a cross bike. And this particular one here has discs on it, but it can take cantilever brakes as well. But it also has facilities to put a rear carrier on, it has facilities for mud guards, and it doubles up for a number of different things. And it's becoming very, very popular as a cross bike, because cyclocross is becoming popular again. And we're working on a similar thing to one of our best-selling bikes here, called our Fratello, which is an unbelievable bike in steel that is used for fast touring,
Audax, that sort of thing.
Audax, commuting, everything. And all our stockists, wherever they are in England or internationally, everyone loves that Fratello. And that will actually cross over with disc brakes later on this year as well.
Well, you heard it here first on the bike show. Thanks, Grant.
Pleasure. Thank you.
And that's it for this opening edition of the spring season of the bike show. Thanks for listening. Until next week, goodbye.